Hello, I'm Al Ritchie of Lateral Coaching, and this is the next in our series of podcasts from Executive Coaching Associates. On this podcast, I'm talking with Ian Farrington of ProDev UK Limited. The topic is roles and players in a team environment. So if we're talking about teams, first thing that occurs to me, and I suspect occurs to many, is that you need somebody to lead the team. But am I correct in that, Ian?
Well, I think that actually goes to the heart of this question about roles and players, because I think what teams do need is leadership.
That's a different thing.
Exactly. That's not the same as saying you need a leader. And of course, there are plenty of examples of self-leading teams out there.
Okay, that may be an aside, but give me an example of a self-leading team.
So where the team actually work together with equal contribution to the key decisions that are taken and the key responsibilities and accountabilities.
Okay, gotcha. Understand what you're saying then. All right, but if we are talking about leadership, there must be various types of leadership.
Yes, and I think that's understanding that leadership in a way encompasses a number of roles. So already we're now starting to talk about roles in roles, and this is where we get to in this space. And there's a role that you might describe as thematic. So there are people who are there because they understand finance or because they understand how to network or understand how to communicate. Different from people who are there offering a level of organizational leadership. And sometimes that's about leading within the organization that you're working in. Sometimes that's about understanding how to engage with and drive interaction with the organizations you're working in.
Okay. Now, I would also suggest or assume that there is an interpersonal element within that, because leadership certainly needs to involve interpersonalities and interpersonal communications.
And again, that there are both roles to be played within and beyond the team. And I've certainly been on teams where there's been a specific discussion about someone responsible for being the team glue.
Right.
That person who connects with us, holds us together, makes sure we're all in track, working together in the right space to be doing the job we're doing.
Okay, but that person may not be the designated team leader.
Indeed not.
And there will be somebody normally designated as a team leader by the powers that be.
More often than not. And then I think one of the interesting challenges sometimes for that designated leader is understanding the difference between being a leader and being a manager. Because quite often the person appointed leader is also appointed to be the manager. And they're different roles.
I should add, by the way, for the benefit of the listeners, that Ian and I had, in theory, a 10-minute conversation around some of these aspects before we started recording. In practice, it was a 45-minute, and we felt we'd barely scratched the surface. But more on that later on. We've talked about very briefly thematic, interpersonal and organisational strategy or strategic must come into this somewhere as well.
Again, it's around what's the team there to do? What's the impact of the team's outputs and outcomes? And sometimes that means engaging and focusing at different levels.
Okay, so if we had a team that was responsible for prototyping a Class A widget and getting it through to production, that may be a strategic function or it may be an operational function because it's already been decided that it's going to be done. Whereas strategic might be, are we going to make Class A widgets? Or have I got the wrong end of the stick?
So I'm afraid it depends is the right answer. And why it depends is one, because sometimes we're at the stage where there is that initial decision being taken. And at that point, there may be a strategic versus operational call. If we go beyond that decision and we say, yes, we want to make this happen, what will often be required is both strategic and operational leadership, because the work has to be done to go from drawing on the back of a bank packet to nicely 3D printed widget, whatever it's for. But all that has to happen in a strategic context for the recipient, the customer of that output and outcome. And so there is that need to engage throughout that operational process. So you need both. Quite often.
And they may not be the same person.
No. And strictly speaking, we've talked before about identities of teams. If we think about this in a project context, it might actually be someone like a senior user or someone in the senior users group who ends up taking on that strategic leadership role. But they won't necessarily be there in the day-to-day team.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just, the reason for the delays is I'm just thinking around some of this lot. It's The more you talk about it, the more complicated it gets.
Yeah. And that really, I think, is probably the message for today's conversation. And you know, we've talked in earlier sessions, when people are putting together a team, our instinctive responses, oh, I want to work with Fred, and I want Ginger on the team, and we'd like Bob, and we'd like Alice. And we're very focused on people, often because we have that instinctive sense of these are people we can work with. People are not the same as roles.
That's the thing I was about to ask you about in terms of going from, we've established that leadership and the designated leader may have very little to do with each other. And that then made me think of exactly that point, roles versus people. So I'm not Fred or Ginger or Bob or Alice or who, there are two others as well earlier.
Ted and Carol.
Thank you, Ted and Carol.
In the mix. That's it.
Okay. So roles and people.
We start at the beginning, actually, because quite often a team is formed on the basis of we need something done, let's put those people together. And quite often the team then struggles for quite a while because you've not necessarily thought about the roles the team needs and therefore not necessarily thought about whether they are the right people for that team at that time.
Okay, so I'm just going to question this a little bit. So you started out by saying that teams often get formed on the basis of the people we like to work with, regardless of their competencies in the particular area this team is going to work in.
I think that's quite common. Yeah. And, you know, we've talked before about the impact of different sizes of organization. And in some ways, if you're a company of five people, there are only ever five people in your team. So it's kind of straightforward. If you're in a large company, 2, 3, 4, 10,000, actually an awful lot of the company isn't known to you. And in that sense is estranged from you. So it tends to encourage that instinctive desire to work with people you know and you feel you can trust.
Yeah, okay, I get that. I mean, that is a big difference between us. You spent quite a lot of time working in large organizations.
Yes.
I spent the vast majority of my working life in small to medium. And if you needed a project team and there were five roles to be performed, then there were probably only five or six people for all those roles. So it wasn't a case of choosing who you liked to be on the team. It was choosing the people who could actually do the right things that needed to be done automatically. So I think there's a different starting point there.
I think that's true, but I think there is still merit in thinking around the implications of the role and how much human effort that role takes, and therefore how we go about matching people and role and structure to task. And so you can have multiple solutions. You know, ideally, I guess, in a large organization, you want to have one role, one person doing that role, and that gives you lots of clarity, and that presumably is a good thing. The reality, I suspect, in more teams than not, is when you've got a big project going on, you may have one role defined, but with several people performing that role. And that may be people contributing to the equivalent of one full-time person a week. So each of us doing a little bit through the week. It may be, if it's sufficiently big, that you need 10 accountants on a project.
That's a scary thought.
Exactly. But, you know, nonetheless, it's one role.
Yes, okay.
But you have multiple people doing it because it's that level of resource impact. Now, the flip, and I think you probably experience this more than me, is in the smaller organizations with smaller teams, the reality is going to tend to be one person doing several roles.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And trying to get their head around which role am I in, how am I contributing, and how important is it to have a clear distinction between those roles over time?
That's always a question of hats.
Yes.
Very much so. And yes, been round that loop with teams I've been involved with on a number of occasions. Fine. So the point here is clarity.
Yes. And then I think if we wanted to add spice to that mix, that's about people, that's about amount of time, resource time required, how you do that allocation. Of course, what we haven't mentioned is, so what about competence? What about personality fit? Now, again, if there are only three of you in the organization, there's not a lot of choice. You kind of have to get on and do it.
Yes, that's very true. But yes, even in small companies and small teams, you do get circumstances where there is one person who is very much square peg, round hole in terms of personality. And you have to make it work because there's no choice. In a bigger organization, you do have a choice, I'm assuming.
Well, it's an interesting point. You would assume that. May not be a correct assumption.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, you come back to what is the purpose of the team? Therefore, what are the roles that need to be performed? And if we're talking about something that is a new venture or genuinely transformational for an organization, you may well not have somebody with the right competence, somebody with the right mindset to make the contribution you need for that task.
We're going on the basis that an executive is a team, a board is a team. In fact, just about everything is a team in real life, one way or the other. You can put team theories around the whole lot. But if you've got somebody in, let's say, so it's the board, and there's someone on the board who is the wrong person for the role, does beg the question why they're on the board in the first place.
Well, that may be about allocation around that particular role with a particular focus. But also, in some ways, this is why there is merit for boards in having non-executive directors.
Yeah. Yeah,
so point. What you can do is if you are doing something that's going to be transformational, and most of you are, your experience is in management, having someone come on for a period of 2-3 years who has a background in transformational change as a non-exec director, probably not a bad idea.
Yeah, I'd definitely agree with you on that one.
And you can use that as well for development for the existing board members, because you know a lot of time with the lack of compatibility is to do with lack of experience and lack of insight. So part of the value going down the NED route is being able to bring people in to help develop those competences. Now, if we then play that through, that might not be a bad model for more operational teams. So sometimes the answer may be to bring in someone from outside to help balance that role fit.
Are we talking about from outside the organisation here?
Potentially, yes.
Yeah. I'm just thinking around that one too. Sorry for the silence.
Well, I have the advantage of video, so I can see that look of, that wasn't the answer I thought we were going to get.
So. No, it's absolutely fine. But it's also, I want to say that's a really good point as well. There's absolutely no reason why. I agree with you. I've been a non-exec director on a few occasions, and it's always been about bringing something into that organisation that the directors haven't got. But from talking about roles and people and the clarities, and you brought in the word competence, that brings in presumably the word matching.
Yeah.
How do we go about matching? Now, there are an awful lot of third-party tools out there. Some of them are great. Some of them are less so. How would you handle that, sir?
So I think, again, we need to recognise that there are lots of people who want to sell tool A, tool B. Each of these tools have their own advantages and disadvantages. The first point is recognising there's no silver bullet here.
Right.
So there's a bit of clarity about what it is you're trying to expose and evolve in this space. And so therefore, you may be more concerned about the fact that people aren't connecting, that there seems to be something in the ear and the mindset that's not connecting. And at that point, you're probably looking at more of a preference-based assessment, so something like Myers-Briggs. It may be more to do with traits. So particularly if you've got a relative, if we're staying with the board example, if you have a relatively new board with people not really adjusted yet to being in that role, actually exposing some assumptions about the required traits and the adopted traits is probably quite useful. Sometimes, actually, it's about helping people understand that there are multiple roles that need to be satisfied in order to make things work. And sometimes it's about helping people to do that mapping. So you can do that in one level with tools like Belbin, or you have tools like Profit, which can also make that solution clearer. But it is about understanding the question. And I guess, you know, we've talked about the potential bringing in outside, and I think that can be a good option, but you have to make sure you're buying the right thing. And sometimes, you know, you can rush to a sort of a boilerplate consultancy solution that isn't necessarily where you need to be. What may help, and I guess, you know, we need to say this because it's part of our stock in trade, is this, I think, is an area in particular where coaching can really step in with the board and help them understand and explore what it is they actually need, and therefore how they need to go to market or how they need to go to the rest of the organization in order to bring together the right team with the right role set to do what needs to be done.
Take all that on board. Until you mentioned coaching, and yes, I accept we are both coaches and we both work with teams, and that's part of what we big part of what we do. If you're bringing in an external person to a team, then you also need to go through this matching for that person as well.
Yes.
To make sure that person has got the right set of traits, of preferences, of role capability as is needed to plug the gap. I don't think I put that brilliantly, but hopefully that came over okay.
Yeah.
So the point I guess I'm making here is there are two ways of doing that. One is bringing in an external person who becomes part of the team. Another way of doing it is to use team coaching to help the team understand this area around preferences, trait and role.
And in fairness, I think there's probably worth a note of caution, a note of calibration here. We're often talking, particularly in the roles that you and I have, we're often talking about teams that are there to do quite major things for, within, to an organisation. And at that level, if you're paying for a team to do that, you need to be taking it seriously. So you need to be thinking about this stuff in quite some detail. We're not necessarily talking about the team that's there to do something more operational, that's straightforward, that's understood, where the requirement is actually purely technical in the sense of, you know, physically outfit a building for security or for IT. There are some things that you need to do in that space, but it's a different kind of team dynamic, a different kind of dependency. So you wouldn't necessarily be looking to do so much investment in your matching. But that said, you know, if it comes to doing an IT outfit for a building,
then you do.
You are still doing a level of matching.
Yes, you have to do it.
You know, so if it may feel a little bit as though we're coming up with this huge sort of behemoth of a recipe for doing things. In practice, most organizations are doing some of these things already anyway. And a lot of what we're talking about is moving to doing that more consciously and therefore making more choices about what they need and then getting it.
Let's move on to the next topic. We've both been in teams, I'm sure, where there's been an element of gamesmanship, possibly even sabotage. Now, these probably all come under some sort of heading in your mind. It might have something to do with shadow somewhere.
Well, I suppose betraying the kind of, you know, the working with Jungian ideas that you have, you know, the anima and the shadow. And teams are quite good places for the shadow to surface.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Because they tend to have a focus. Typically, a team is brought together to make something happen. Now, when it becomes part of the steady state of a business, then people move in and out of the team, and that's all fine. But most teams in the first instance are usually brought together to make something different happen. And difference points to change, change points to risk, risk points to threat. So you can see there's a whole sort of gamut of things that start to be stirred up. And then you look at, so who's on the team? And certainly what you find in larger organizations is if there's a new team spearheading project X or development Y, there's a sort of thought that, okay, so are they the coming future of the organization?
So what's going to happen to me?
Yeah. It may be that it's taking the organization the direction that, even though I'm on the team, I don't necessarily feel is the way I want to go. Now, I'm not talking about people literally plotting to sabotage teams, although I have actually seen that in some circumstances.
You're not alone.
But subconsciously, you know, the mind will be ticking away around, actually, are we involved in the role that's going to be bad for all of us in the end?
So what sort of things have you seen? I mean, I mentioned gamesmanship and sabotage. What other aspects maybe do this?
So I think the other one that's a slightly more subtle version of that is what you might call reframing.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so the idea is it's a bit like a sort of strategic or project version of Chinese whispers. And so you start off with the original message. And the message is, we're going to do this for the whole organization.
Oh, hang on. We're not here on the line of send reinforcements. We're going to advance. Turning into send three and fourpence, we're going to a dance. And for those who are somewhat younger than I am, the three and fourpence is about 17 pence.
which of course betrays quite a lot about us, because the last time any of us could get into a dance was 17 pence, really. But it is part and parcel of that process. So what happens is, oh, we're going to do this for the whole organisation, which gets slightly toned down into, so what we're going to do is we're going to pilot this for this part of the organisation, which then gets turned into, well, we need to test some of these things. And then depending on what the shadow behaviour is about, what happens is the thing is watered down into test of proof of theory of, oh, it's all too difficult. And it washes itself away in the tide. Or you have a sort of de-scoping, so that there's less function, or there's less application, or all the applications focused only on one team. So that the whole thing then becomes less about transformation and more about, that was an interesting experiment, wasn't it?
But we're not going to take it anywhere.
Yeah. And all of that can be done through the most gracious of smiles. And yet we end up with that, essentially that sabotage by stealth, I suppose, in a sense.
Yeah. And I'm sure, I've certainly seen this. I'm sure you have too. In fact, to be honest, I'm sure most people listening to this have seen this as well. It's not uncommon. Okay. Have we just about done that bit, you might think?
So I think so. So I, related to this question of shadow behavior, I guess, is then the question of external disruption. And what do I mean by that? So sometimes the facts change. You know, you're planning to deliver a whole new catering service to the world, and then we lock down for COVID.
Oh, okay. Yes. I'm completely with what you mean there. Yes.
Yeah.
That is definitely external disruption, that one.
Yeah. And there's no planning you can do for that. And sometimes it's the world moves on, the game moves on, and genuinely, actually, you just need to rethink what's going on. Sometimes the world moves on and that becomes a good excuse for questioning what we should be doing. And some of that can happen at the very low level, practical level. You know, if we think about churn in teams, and again, probably more common in a larger organization, but you get a new head or a new deputy or a new specialist. And a nice way of kind of stopping progress is to sort of hit the brakes, because I need to understand. And then the dialogue of understanding kind of adds more and more obstacles to where the thing goes.
Yeah. There's also more illustration of the difference between bigger companies and smaller companies in terms of teams and how they act.
Yeah.
Because some smaller company is far more visible if you're trying to do something like that.
Yes. Although, interestingly, that those people who are being disruptive, whether consciously or not, I found are never too troubled about whether other people can see it or not, even in quite small companies.
You surprise me.
Okay.
No, I'm not trying to doubt you at all. I'm surprised that. Would I be pleased if people knew I was doing my best to reframe? I suppose somebody who had the same thoughts as I did would be, but for people who are trying to get on and do things would have exactly the opposite. I don't know.
It comes back to those personal dynamics. Now, I think we probably don't want to labour this too much. On the one hand, I think we've both seen quite a lot of shadow behaviour over the years in a variety of team contexts. And maybe what that tells us is that one of the roles that is absolutely key to any team is the sort of guardianship of the team purpose and making sure that that focus holds true. It may need to be amended, but amend it for the right reasons, not the wrong reasons.
Absolutely. Yeah, completely get that and completely agree with it. Yes. Someone who basically, that person then becomes a heart and it has to keep beating.
Yeah.
Well, that's a nice emotional way of looking at it. But it is quite an emotional thing. How many of us have sat in team meetings where you think we're getting absolutely nowhere because of X or Y or Bob or Alice? To use your favorite characters, they haven't done something or they've done something different. And there's a level of frustration within the other members of the team. But if you've got somebody who's taking this role around team purpose and can bring everybody back together, actually, that's default leadership, is it not?
So it plays into leadership. Of course, the other thing it plays into is your frustration with Bob's failure about Bob? Because, of course, we tend to make assumptions that well, that's Bob's role, and Bob hasn't done it. And sometimes it's worth double checking. Did anybody tell him?
Yes. And again,
when there's churn in teams, you know, it's very easy to lose sight of who actually knows fully what their roles are and how they're supposed to be played out.
It's this awful word, assume, and yes, the way we do it, we use it. So I have been recently been trying to go out of my way to not make assumptions. And all I've done is irritate people by not making assumptions because I've asked for specific answers to questions. So I've gone back to assuming things again. And of course, what happens when you make assumptions? You get things wrong.
Yeah.
And we assume that Bob had been told what to do. And if nobody had, it's not surprising Bob didn't do it. But yes, yeah, that point is well taken. We're moving more and more in the direction of defining roles, it strikes me.
This is exactly the space I was sort of moving in towards, because I think, you know, what we're seeing is, as we go around these various boys, actually with teams that are going to be meaningful, we come back to that question and we talk about the phase calculation, the focus action connection effect of good teams. One key element in the focus of a team is understanding who's responsible for what, who's accountable for what. And I think, well,
hang on, I'm going to interrupt.
Okay.
Responsible and accountable,
yep,
are not necessarily the same thing.
No, that's why I mentioned both.
Right, the way
so was I
thought you were so, okay, I thought you were just rephrasing.
No.
Okay,
right. So they are distinct things, and right, that itself is kind of worth exploring, and I think in a way points to some of where I'm going with this, that for teams that are significant in particular, actually this whole question of focus, this question of responsibility, what's being done, who does what, the question of accountability, who's held to account for what, the question of authority, who can say what, who can sign off what, the notion that there are multiple roles, each of us may play multiple roles, or that we may have to share roles, all of these things enter into this defining role space, and very quickly you start to see it's a complex map. And I would say that the more strategic the team, the bigger the team, the bigger the team's impact, the more important it becomes to have some clarity around those ideas.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. But that's also in itself a lot of effort.
Yes.
Because some of these things, my interpretation, my definition of the word accountable may be different to the person I'm sitting next to. And you go around other words like authorities or competence or purpose. I mean, purpose of the individual, purpose of the team, purpose of the organization. And that does go back to why are we here, which is one of the very first podcasts we recorded. But purpose still, I think, has different meanings to different people. So do we have to start off with a dictionary?
I think to an extent we do. But I think if you're looking at a short-term team with a very clear, very well-defined focus, you can go through that process quite quickly. That process probably takes longer if you're going through a team that's going to be doing something strategic and have a transformational impact. Now, in the project world, you've come across this idea of the RACI table.
Yeah.
And that's fine, as long as everybody understands R for responsibility, this is what responsibility means, A for accountability, that's what that means. So I think there is some need, and you can do it on a page or you can do it on several pages, you flex according to your need, actually setting down and getting common agreement of what we're talking about. So what do we mean by the purpose of this team? What does it look like to be successful? What does it look like to be making good progress over relevant periods of time, which depending on the task could be weekly, monthly, quarterly? Who is actually the leader in terms of accountability, in terms of the one where the buck really stops for the whole behavior of the team? Who has authority, say for technical decisions or for financial decisions or for commercial decisions, because they're slightly different? Who has accountabilities? What do we mean by accountability? Who has responsibilities? What do we mean by that? And you can go, I think, to the level, and I think this is appropriate in larger teams or teams dealing with more uncertainty, to defining some of the expectations that you have of a team member and thinking about some of the types of leadership that are going to be required and thinking about some of the roles that are going to be needed in a team.
Okay.
I think that is worth the effort, but I stress that when you've got a team that's on a very short-term, very well-defined, very clear focus, you can do that quite happily in the course of an afternoon. Because the four of you can sit around a table, thrash it out, make sure we're all on the same page, write it up so that any stakeholders you need to communicate with understand what you're about and job done. If you are doing something that's in a more uncertain, more complex space, it's probably going to take a bit more time. You might have to engage stakeholders in developing those definitions because that's part of their understanding what they're going to get from your team's activity.
If we take the word responsibility,
yep,
are we going to have to redefine that word responsibility for every team, or can there not be an institutional or organizational definition of what is meant by responsibility? What is meant by accountability in this organization?
So you remember what I said about reframing?
Yeah, okay.
So I think the more positive answer in that space is it depends on the organization and what you're trying to do. So if you are an organization that's large, you have lots of teams, you want them to connect with each other, allowing those teams to have different definitions of accountability, responsibility, authority is just a recipe for disaster.
Agreed.
You've really got to kind of nail that down, and then you can start to delegate that framework down to each team. If you are putting together a team whose core responsibility is disruptive, so you want them to do something that is going to be genuinely transformational for your organization, you might want to have something slightly more freewheeling. But yes, make a conscious decision. Don't just simply let it happen. Otherwise, you get unexpected conflict.
Okay, so we've got an argument both for and against at the same time.
Yes.
Which seems to go very well along the concept of roles and players.
Yeah.
And particularly in terms of defining roles.
And it's all part of that space. You know, it's about, I suppose for me in the end, it's about recognizing that there is complexity beyond wanting Fred and Ginger on your team if you want your team to deliver. How much complexity is a function of what the team is there to try and do, how the team sits in the organization, in its broader stakeholder community. And for me, the larger the impact, the more strategic the impact, the more uncertain the process and the outcome, the more there needs to be, to use your word, a heart in the middle of the team that is sort of beating to a constant rhythm that remains clear for everybody as they go through the task.
I think that's probably a good place to call this podcast to an end, if that's the right way of saying it. It'll do. But we were talking before we started recording that this whole area of defining roles would probably be a good thing to do in a seminar or a webinar, I guess, as well, just equally well online as well as face-to-face.
I think so. And in particular, I think that there's an interesting route here to talk a little bit more about what we mean by accountability, responsibility, and competence and roles. And without necessarily offering a template to other people, at least offer a framework for that discussion for other people. And I think being able to do that in a more structured webinar is probably a good way forward.
Yeah, and I also think that the more interactive this sort of thing is, the better people get the point and be able to use some of it as well. Because if you're just listening to something, yeah, fine, I'm listening to lots of big words and blah, 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 blah. Whereas if you're actually in a room and you're playing it out and figuring it out, who's responsible for something, but they're not accountable for it. What does that mean?
Well, it's the bungee jump principle.
You mean, let's go to Clifton Suspension Bridge and give it a shot?
Well, the point is everybody gets the idea, but it's only when you're standing on the top of the bridge you understand what it means.
I know, I wouldn't do it, that's for sure. I'd jump out of an aircraft, but I wouldn't bungee jump.
Fair enough. Yes, but I'd just never combine those two activities. That really wouldn't end well.
I think we're getting a little off topic at the end of this podcast. One thought does occur to me, and this thought may have occurred to people who are listening to them, that each of these podcasts is roughly half an hour in length, and we've talked about different aspects of teams. And it could seem to come over as being a bit all too much and all too complicated. A lot of this, from my point of view anyway, is exploring some of the depths and some of the issues that often get overlooked. We're not trying to say that every team has got to completely redefine itself and reinvent itself, far from it. It's of, if something's not working, have you thought of?
Well, and I think for me that this is really illustrating the series of conversations that brought us around to this notion of face. If things are going wrong with teams, it typically tends to be an either or and around focus, action, connection, and effect. And I think that actually is the core of this, is come back to those four conversations. And all we're really saying is the bigger the team, the bigger the task, the more uncertainty there is in the space, the more those four conversations are likely to be quite extended.
If it's four people sitting around, we've got to get this project completed by the end of next week, it's a different kettle of fish.
Yeah.
Ian, it's been a delight today. Well,
pleasure as ever. Thank you, Al.
Looking forward to the next one we do. Cheers now.
Cheers now.